Completely Conspicuous, episode 247, October 9th, 2012. Completely Conspicuous. I'm your host, Jay Kumar. This week I've got part one of my conversation with guest James Grelian as we discuss the latest NHL lockout and why we still give a damn about hockey. I've also got the Bonehead of the Week and music from Ceremony, The Mountain Goats, Allo Darlin', and Yola Tango. As always, please send any comments, questions, or presidential debate pointers to j.kumar@gmail.com. Also, please check out Completely Conspicuous at compconcast.blogspot.com and on Facebook, and you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/coomdog. You can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. And now here's Ceremony with Everything Burns. To my conversation with James Grelian. All right, here with the great James Grelian over the magic of Skype. James, how's it going?
It's great. It's a lovely, lovely starting fall evening in Denver, Colorado.
That is a lovely place.
It's lovely, and it's just and after the 100 degree winter, or sorry, 100 degree summer, 100 degree winter. Geez, what is it, Kelvin? It was roasting all summer, and now it's actually finally starting to turn. It's starting to feel like hockey weather.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting some fall weather here too, here in New England. It's been kind of rainy the last few days, but you know, it's starting to cool off a little bit. Certainly not, 80 degrees anymore, but, yeah, speaking of hockey, there is none. James is a you're a noted hockey guy. You've done a podcast called The Rink. You blog about it, Jerseys and Hockey Love, and you know, you're into it. You're a big Avs fan.
People would call me hardcore. I don't know. I don't consider myself hardcore. I mean, maybe somewhat obsessed, but yeah. I've got a nice little jersey collection going on. I'm just starting my first year of my first season ever of playing on a team.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, now that I'm actually kind of stable since I traveled so much. And yeah, I mean, I'm not any good, but that's okay.
And now, am I remembering it right that you kind of got into it after the last lockout?
I was into it before the lockout, but then I was a very, very casual hockey fan, and I was pretty broke for a while when the Avalanche first came to Colorado in 96.
Was like the glory days.
Oh, God, yeah. It was great. It was and it was easy to pay attention to them because they were everywhere, especially because they won the Stanley Cup in their very first season in Denver.
Yeah. Yeah, that worked. I mean, I felt so bad for those people in Quebec. They, you know, they lose it. The Nordiques moved to Colorado, and the first year they win the cup. They get Patrick Waugh, and boom.
I felt a little bad, but only a little, because you know,
why would you feel bad?
I'll be selfish, you know.
Yeah,
and it was great. You're right. It was the glory days. And then when after a while, in about 2002. I was finally able to start going to hockey games. I could afford it. I was traveling for a living, so I could go to lots of different places. I would see a lot of minor league stuff like that. And then promptly after that, 2004, 2005 was the first lockout, and which actually in realistic terms, it was the second lockout because the first one, I believe, was 93, 94. And or was it
94, 95,
and that cost half a season.
Yeah,
but 2004, 2005 cost the entire season. No Stanley Cup was handed out.
Yeah, which was, you know, ridiculous. And it's funny, I totally forgot about that. There was a strike in 92. It lasted 10 days. The players actually went on strike on April 1st, and 30 games were lost. And then obviously they came back and had the playoffs, but that's kind of, you don't hear about that too much anymore. But
and 30 games seems almost nothing considering today, just today as we are recording this, they canceled the first 86 games of the season. That's 86 overall. So
first 2 weeks, yeah.
Which I'm surprised that's all that they canceled.
Well, and I saw somebody report that, you know, the league basically said, you know, don't expect us to just do it in 2 week increments. You know, we could chop off more the next time. So, like, I guess basically there will be no hockey until October 24th at the earliest.
And that would be if, like, tomorrow they all got together and agreed on everything. And that's not even remotely close to happening.
Yeah, so, you know, I guess, you know, we can talk about sort of obviously the nuts and bolts of this NHL lockout, but I think, you know, the bigger picture is just sort of, you know, these sports labor issues that keep popping up again. You know, the NHL is not the only league that's had problems. I mean, the NBA lost about almost half the season this past year.
And they would have lost a half season completely if they hadn't had such a condensed schedule, which I was reading a report today where one NBA executive said, yeah, it wasn't such a great idea. Even though it was profitable, there were more injuries, there were more issues, things like that. So.
Well, yeah. And you also get guys, you know, whenever even like a player holds out and misses training camp, and then, you know, even starts the season on time, inevitably he gets injured just because he hasn't been working out the same way he would, you know, if he was in camp. And you see a lot of these things, you know, when leagues come back after, you know, these labor delays, inevitably there's a slew of hamstring and, you know, injuries and all these kinds of things from guys either just not in shape or not in good enough shape or whatever. So, you know, there's that, and you know, and the quality of the games is going to suffer because, you know, these guys, you know, a lot of them are signing with teams in Europe, you know, every day we hear about a couple more guys who signed contracts to go over there and basically play until they come back. But, the competition isn't as good for the most part. And, they're not, like, going all out. They're not trying to, they're obviously, holding back because they're not making the money that they'd be accustomed to. So, I think whenever you get these shortened seasons, it's lower quality hockey.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. These guys are playing full out. There was a report recently of Rick Nash, recently traded to the New York Rangers. Huge earner. Huge
bucks.
NHL star at this point. And even if, in my opinion, he hasn't quite proven that he is a huge NHL star, he's certainly one of the power forwards of the league. And he had a shoulder injury. Can you imagine?
First game.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he even played with this team in the last NHL lockout. Can you imagine how Glenn Sather, the GM of the New York Rangers, must have felt when he heard that? That's insane. Another good example would be the Ottawa Senators when they had their Stanley Cup run in 2007. Prior to that, Dominic Hasek, who was no spring chicken, that's for sure, he injured his groin in the Olympics, not playing for the Senators, and was out for the rest of the season. Ray Emery stepped up and played really well, it wasn't the same as Hasek. And how would you feel about losing a player like that to an injury and eventually losing the Stanley Cup because of?
Yeah, well, and obviously I think the GMs and coaches are in a weird position because, they want to be out there. They want the teams playing and they're kind of at the whim of their owners, and they have to stay, in lockstep with management. But at the same time, they've got to be kind of losing their minds a little bit, watching, a season possibly go to waste, and at the very least seeing players, taking their livelihoods into their own hands and, potentially getting hurt somewhere else.
Absolutely. And you heard, I'm sure, about, speaking of coaches, Adam Oates, the coach of the Washington Capitals, they pretty much assigned him to the minor league team in Hershey, the Hershey Bears of the AHL, so that he could work with the younger guys. So they're kind of getting around the whole coaches can't work with the NHL players, even though they're NHL players assigned to the Hershey Bears.
Yeah. Well, that's one way to handle it. I mean, but I guess, from a, on a larger scale, how did this make you feel about the sport? I mean, or about the league? I mean, obviously we've seen this before and, it cost an entire season and, I think there was a lot of doom and gloom back in 2004 about, will fans come back to the game when players eventually do, or when the league eventually does return, and the fans have, and, it's amazingly, the league has grown and they signed this huge new contract with NBC, and then here we are again. How do you feel about all that as a fan?
Well, I mean, first off, I feel like, to me, you're asking me two separate questions.
yeah, I probably asked you about four questions.
You kind of asked one question, but it's one question to, I think, a lot of NHL fans, and it's two questions to me. This is going to sound a little weird, but because you asked how I felt about the sport, and then you asked about how I felt about the league, which to a lot of people, that's the exact same thing. And to me, I feel like the NHL, even though it has the best players, even though it's the most prominent league, all those things, that unlike, let's say, baseball or American football, I have to qualify that, of course, by American football, are very much about their major league components, and that's it. There's college football, and college, of course, feeds the NFL and the like, but I feel like the sport is much bigger than the NHL, so I worry a little less about it. I get a little concerned, a little upset when I hear people say, "Well, if the NHL isn't going to be around, well, I'm just not going to support hockey." Well, there's a lot of junior teams. There's a lot of college teams. You have a team of your college alumni.
Yep.
And
University of New Hampshire.
There you go. And would you not go to a University of New Hampshire game if they were playing nearby because the NHL is locked out?
No, if anything, I'll go to more games.
Exactly. And part of my philosophy about that was shaped by the fact that in the 2004-2005 lockout, I spent most of it in Boston. And I saw so much good hockey. I went to two All-Star games, the UHL All-Star game in Glens Falls, New York, and the AHL All-Star game in Manchester, New Hampshire. I went to
Vegas.
Yep. Went to Boston College games. I went to Northeastern games. I went to the Beanpot. AHL minor league games. I went and saw the Lowell Lock Monsters, who were the AHL affiliate of the Carolina Hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear I saw half the team that won the Stanley Cup the next year on that roster.
Yeah, because Stahl played for them, right?
Stahl played for them. Cam Ward played for them. Mike Commodore played for them. The list goes on, you know. And I saw Mike Commodore knock a guy out in one punch. But now, mind you, it was Brent Thompson of the Providence Bruins, and his career was coming to an end. So it kind of wasn't a fair fight. So,
but still,
yeah, absolutely. And so I got to see a ton of hockey during a lockout. A lot of people don't get that privilege. And another thing that the NHL, that people who just watch the NHL don't understand about hockey elsewhere is how much harder fans of other teams have to work to see their teams play or to follow the road games. We get the privilege of most road games, if not all of them, are broadcast. And minor leagues, that's not the case. There is no TV contract. You either go to the game or you follow stats online or listen to the radio.
Yeah.
So you see maybe half the games unless you're a diehard fan.
Unless you're a season ticket holder or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so they have to work a lot harder, and we get this privilege of not having to do that. And most NHL fans don't really get that. So So I feel like I'm less worried about the sport than I am about the league.
Yeah, that's why I qualified that. Sort of mid question.
Now, mind you, the league, I think they're being a bunch of idiots, but
yeah, just totally. Yeah, no, I agree. I just feel like, you know, and while I am kind of leaning a little more towards the players, I also realize that, you know, the union's led by Donald Fehr, mm-hmm. who is, you know, prevailed over many baseball labor work stoppage in the past, you know. So the minute they brought him on, I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, you know, I can't understand. A
couple of years down the road, we're in trouble.
But boy, after the last lockout, when Bob Goodnow was the executive director of the NHL Players Association and pretty much disappeared off the face of the earth when the lockout started, it was to see somebody at least behind the players a little more forcefully is kind of nice. There is some reason for the players to be in the fight rather than Bob Goodnow, who said, we're never going to succumb to a salary cap. And then after the season was lost, just pretty much said, okay, we'll take the salary cap.
Yeah, well, and that, you know, and now to see the owners kind of go, well, we have a salary cap, but it's not enough, you know, and it's just like, but to see that, and then on the other hand, you know, they're signing, you know, players to these ridiculous free agent contracts, you know, like Minnesota and, you know, all these teams that are just crying poor mouth on one hand, and then, you know, it's like, manage your own goddamn money, you know, I mean, you're the owner, you know,
absolutely.
Don't give out that contract. I don't understand it.
It does seem really hypocritical that they would sign that these provisions that the owners would ask for in one breath, they turn around right before this current contract ends and go against exactly what they're asking for. They want 5-year contract limits in this next contract, and they signed Minnesota Wild signed two guys on the same day to 13-year contracts.
Yeah, was it 13 years? Like, was it 98 million? I don't know, some kind of ridiculous.
$98 million over 13 years. I believe you are correct.
a team that, you know, in the past hadn't spent diddly squat on anything, and then they go and do that right before, you know, knowing that this thing was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, because they obviously knew it was going to happen.
I kind of curious about how you feel about your team, I hate to out you here, but the Toronto Maple Leafs.
No.
It's
a burden I live with.
You wear it well. It's chin up, man, chin up. But you stand behind a team that is a high revenue earning team, is now owned
highest, I think.
Yeah, owned by two media conglomerates in Canada, two media powerhouses, sports media powerhouses, mind you. They are spending pretty much the salary cap, sometimes to their detriment, but still they're reshaping. You can't find tickets to a Toronto Maple Leafs game. And yet, they're in the same fight as, let's say, Nashville and Phoenix, who, of course, is owned by the league, but that will eventually change. St. Louis, Dallas, who was sold recently. How do you feel about the lockout and the negotiations in that kind of context?
I'm not going to be one of these guys that says, "Oh, I'm never gonna watch again. I'm disgusted." I am disgusted, but yeah, I am gonna watch again because I love the game and I love my team, and you know, I enjoy watching NHL hockey. I'm old enough to have seen several of these stupid things now. You know, I remember in the mid '90s after the Rangers won the Cup, hockey was never more popular than it was that summer, and then boom. You know, they missed half the season that fall. You know, it's just like, it's ridiculous. So, you know, the NHL, if nothing else, they know when to, basically blow a good thing. last lockout, really, you know, it was definitely a bummer. But by the same token, I found that I can survive. You know, I mean, there's other things. Like you said, you know, I got into college hockey a little more. I mean, I already am into it. But you know, I have a buddy who has BU season tickets. So, you know, mm-hmm. I go to a few games with him, and you know, I went to some BC games, and I think I saw UNH once or twice. Those games sell out. UNH, you know, plays up in this little town in New Hampshire, and basically the games sell out before they even go on sale. Like, you know, it's just all season ticket holders. So, but you can finagle a ticket here or there, but you know, I went to minor league games, and I also am a football fan, and, so I got into that. And actually that last lockout kind of coincided with, you know, I had a newborn daughter at that time. So it just meant that I was paying a little more attention to my family probably, which isn't a bad thing either. So, you know, I think one thing that the league needs to realize is that, you know, if you're away long enough, there's plenty of things for people to occupy their time with. They're not going to sit there pining for hockey the whole time, so or for NHL hockey anyway. So, you know, I would be aware. I just feel like, you know, the way the economy is, you could just figure out how much money you're going to save, you know, by not, like, I'm not going to get center ice. I get the satellite package so I can watch all the Leafs games and be depressed all the time. I won't be spending that $170 or whatever it is. I haven't gone to any NHL games in the last couple of years, cause the Bruins, you know, are the local team here, and they've been good. So tickets have been selling out, but so I haven't been spending money that way, but, you know, it's just, you know, I'm certainly not going to buy any gear, you know, while this is on, going on.
Are you playing rec league hockey this year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I just play pickup. But, you know, I play once a week pretty much year round. Mm-hmm. So, I played last night. It's a blast. I love it. So that's never going to change. You know, I've been doing that since I was a little kid. And, you know, just because these bozos can't figure out how to play nice doesn't mean I can't enjoy hockey. So
I forget. Are you a defenseman? Are you a forward? Or just whatever?
Forward.
Okay.
Forward. Yeah.
I'm currently stuck. I'm not stuck. I'm on defense right now, and Hopefully I'll get a move up for a game just to try it out. But defense seems to be working out.
Good.
I'm penalty minute leader right now. But
oh, really? Oh, you get you're in a league, huh?
Yeah, it's well, I've only got two penalties, so or one penalty, so over two games. So it's not like I really I'm the league penalty minute leader in our on our team, but I'm actually tied with a few people.
I'm you know, hockey fans definitely are dedicated a lot. I mean, you have to be. It's not, you know, it's not the most popular game, you know, in the U.S. So you kind of, I think hockey fans for the most part, you know, except for like the, you know, whenever there's a team that wins a cup, you know, you get a lot of kind of fair weather fans that jump on board. But you know, the dedicated fans, you know, are, you know, just stalwart. You know, they will follow their team and their, you know, and the league, you know, rain or shine. So, you know, they'll be back, but you know, Bettman is definitely pissing people off. And
You know, there were a lot of promises made at the last lockout,
right?
And they weren't kept. The ticket prices thing was a bunch of hooey as soon as it was said that this lockout would lead to lower ticket prices. That's not how tickets work. That's not how gate-driven revenues work. It's whatever the market will bear. We just had Book of Mormon, the Broadway musical.
Yeah, yeah.
They were building their tour, their first U.S. tour here, and they sold out their run, their 3-week run in, I believe it was 5 hours. House seats after that went up to $175 a seat. So they're going to charge what the market can bear, and that certainly reflects on the next cities that they're going to go to. And when, for instance, the Colorado Avalanche were hugely popular and had a sellout streak that was actually a record for a while, they could jack the ticket prices up, much like the demand that happens in Toronto and the Toronto Maple Leafs and their ticket prices and how out of proportion they are with other entertainment or other hockey teams.
Especially considering the product on the ice.
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
You know, that team's been, you know, basically since the last lockout, they haven't made the playoffs. And you know, the first couple of years, they were still, you know, average. You know, they barely missed. But, like, the last few years, it's just been awful. And
45 years, you know, since their last Stanley Cup.
Yeah, year I was born.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Really? It was. Oh, man, that's got to...
Yeah, my dad used to call me the Jinx. So it's like, thanks, Dad. But you know, people still go. I mean, it you know, hockey is, you know, you've been to Canada. You see the fervor for it.
Oh,
I
absolutely.
Mean, you know, I think as it's becoming, you know, more multicultural and you know, you have younger kids who are into different things now. I mean, they're even dealing with that in Canada, but. Still, I mean, there's still just, it's ingrained in the society. You know, I mean, there's still talk about moving a team, an NHL team to, you know, to the Toronto area to have a second team. You know, there's I believe plans are already approved to build a rink, another big arena, you know, in Markham, Ontario, which is, you know, in the burbs, but still it's, you know, they're going to go ahead with it.
Can certainly bear it.
Yeah.
Some things you do just to see how bad they'll make you feel. Sometimes you try to freeze time till the slots are a blur of spinning wheels. But I am just a broken machine, and I do things that I don't really mean. Long black night, morning frost, I'm still here. Precipice, and then slam on the brakes. people crash two or three times and then learn from their mistakes. But we are the ones who don't slow down at all, and there's nobody there to catch us when we fall. Long black night, morning frost, I'm still here, but all is lost. Feel the storm every night, hope it passes by. Hallucinate a shady grove where Judas went to die. Unfurl the black velvet altar cloth, draw a white chalk Baphomet. Mistreat your altar boys long enough, and this is what you get. Sad and angry, can't learn how to behave, still won't know how in the darkness of the grave. Long black night, morning frost, I'm still here.
Understand how you ended up here. Any friend you've ever had has disappeared, and the tug of a heartstring is the line that pulls you home. You bear witness to the ones you used to know, and I keep having these dreams, and I keep having these dreams, and I keep having these dreams. I will come to you when you fall down, and when the lights go out, and we will set the world to rights when I find you. Under California skies, don't you wanna be someone? You've gotta let it go. If we stay here, we'll be old before we know. And the shadow of a midday sun burns beneath your feet, and the old dogs are still sleeping in the street. And I keep having these dreams, and I keep having these dreams, and I keep having these dreams. I will come to you when you fall down, and when the lights go out. Questions, then you answer. It pulls me out in my bones with time. And you tilt my world on its axis every time I look into your eyes. You say the things you love are the things you never have, and when you hold them, they pass through your hands like sand. Well, I have made promises. useful. And I keep having these dreams. And I keep having these dreams. And I keep having these dreams. I will come to you when you fall down and when the lights go out, and we will set the world to rights when I find you under California skies.
And when there was talk of all of who was it? Well, at Pittsburgh for a moment, Nashville, and of course Phoenix moving to Hamilton, Ontario.
Right.
The concern was that it would take away business from Buffalo and Toronto, and Toronto
it's actually closer to Buffalo.
Yeah, and that I could see as being an issue, but Toronto not at all. It's a ridiculously feverish fan base.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would kind of liken it in a way to New England Patriots fans, in just how in how ingrained they are with that team,
or Red Sox.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of going through their Leafs period right now.
Oh, man.
this year they had a really bad year.
Yeah, didn't they just fire their manager today?
Today, yeah, yeah.
Although I don't really blame them.
he was in a tough situation. Because basically they brought him in, Bobby Valentine. They didn't let him bring his own guys in, so they still had the holdover coaches from from Terry Francona's group, and so the coaches were kind of at odds with him. And then he basically the players, it's pretty well documented. There's a lot of malcontents on that team, so and they've traded away a bunch of them, but still it's just it was a. Yeah, this year just went down in flames because, at the beginning of the year, they were considered, certainly to be a contender to win the division. And, they should have made the playoffs last year, and they had a monumental choke in September last year. So, the hopes were high for them, or at least, the hopes weren't as low as they ended up. But, so people were, people pretty much live and die around here. With the Red Sox, it's too bad that the Bruins aren't around because, this would be prime time. I mean, they had a disappointing, flame out last year in the playoffs against Washington, but, they still were pretty popular coming off winning the Cup the year before. So, between them and the Patriots, they would have pretty much owned the town. I mean, they were owning the town. And then, now this happens and people kind of, forget about them again. Mm-hmm.
It's also going to be interesting for the Bruins when they come back because the savior of the team, Tim Thomas, the goalie the goalie with the best story in the league, who won the Vezina at God, how old is he? 37, 38, something like
that. Yeah, he's up there. Yeah.
And he won goalie of the year, wins the Stanley Cup with him, and now he's going to take a year off. And it's probably not coming back.
They picked the right year, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to take a year off. Well, you're locked out anyway, so why not?
Yeah, he's 38. Mm.
38. And he kind of is turning his back on the team, and I can't imagine that that's going to go over so well in a city that has so much sports loyalty.
No, it hasn't gone over well at all. I mean, people are just like, basically forgetting about him already. I mean, it's funny because after they won the Cup, he was like, the biggest guy in town, won the Conn Smythe, is the MVP in the playoffs, just that kind of scrappy battler thing. And then, started to do these wacky, Facebook posts, and obviously the whole thing with going to the White House and refusing to, or not, he didn't go to the White House when the team went, you know, and then posted this Facebook statement about how he was, you know, basically a big Tea Party guy and all that. And, you know, people aren't necessarily like, I think people can respect your politics if, you know, you deal with it in the right way, but I think he's kind of come off, you know,
little heavy-handed with it.
Yeah, well, and then he would make these, you know, he put these like sort of statements on his Facebook page every once in a while, and reporters would come and ask him about it. And, like, he would say, "Well, that's my personal life. I'm not going to comment on that."
Yeah, which is like, how many celebrities, and like it or not, you know, if you win a Stanley Cup and you're the MVP and you know you're the big goalie and all that, you're now a celebrity. But how many celebrities are so out of touch with social media and online world that they don't realize that you're
people can see their stuff?
Yeah, and that's no longer your personal space. If you want it to be personal, make it personal. But you can't just broadcast something and expect people to leave you alone.
Right. And then, like, he's, you know, and then the thing with that kind of, you know, pissed off his teammates is that, you know, when he wouldn't talk to the media would go and all ask them about him. So I don't think there was much, you know, much weeping when he said he wasn't coming back this year. I think, you know, from reading the Boston papers, it was pretty much, you know, guys were kind of glad that he was gone because he'd become a distraction, you know, to the team. So, but yeah. It was an interesting move because, yeah, he'll be, you know, if he comes back, you know, next season, he's going to be, you know, 39 or whatever. You know, that's just, it's not easy to bounce back. Like, you know, you mentioned Hasek, you know, it's just like these guys, actually, after the last lockout, there were a bunch of players who basically just had to retire because I'm thinking of, actually, from the Leafs had signed Brian Leetch, Ron Francis, there's a couple other guys who, you know, basically were in the twilights of their career, but, you know, were hoping to get like one more season in and then basically lost it and just, you know.
Absolutely. You know who actually springs to mind with that? The last guy to lift the Stanley Cup before the previous lockout, Dave Anderchuk. He was the captain of the Leafs. Lightning. He lifted the Stanley Cup, and then we had the lockout, and he was done.
Yeah,
and he was old enough that he was probably going to be done pretty soon. Yeah. Anyways, he might have given it one more skate around the rink, kind of in that Rod Brindamore way.
They lost their victory lap, you know.
Yeah, and which is what the LA Kings are basically doing right now. And if it costs the season, the LA Kings are going to be in that same boat where they win the cup, their first cup. And they're going to pretty much have to wait to raise their banner until the next season. It's kind of sad, but I mean, it's sad, and it's not sad in the regards of it, you know, meaning a ton, but, you know, to the world.
It was a great story to see them kind of come out of nowhere, make the playoffs at the last second, barely, and then just go on this incredible run to win the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. They were a likable team. And it's too bad for them, and you know, really the core fans that they've had over the years, who were certainly supplemented by all the Fairweather fans who jumped on board. But you know, it's too bad that they don't get to enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, sort of that, you know, we're the defending champions. Here we go. You know, it's always weird when you have a year without a champion. Like, I remember baseball in '94. Made it to like August 1st or something, and then there was either a strike or a lockout, and basically it wiped out the rest of the season and the World Series. And it was kind of weird because, like, my Toronto Blue Jays were the defending champs. They'd won 92 and 93. And 94, they were actually having a terrible year, but they were actually the defending champs for one more year because there was no winner that year.
They could have got a season and a half of play with being champs, huh?
Yeah.
Well, since you touched on baseball, let's kind of talk about the other little doom and gloom scenario, replacement players.
Yes, this is interesting.
I mean, I'm you look at the hockey world in the U.S., in Canada, And almost everything seems tied into the NHL. The minors, you know, two leagues. You know, the AHL is a league below the minors, that are below the NHL. That's filled with prospects. The next two leagues down, which are kind of even, the ECHL and the Central Hockey League, those are about half at least are NHL prospects. So really, who does that leave if they actually wanted to do replacement players? Anybody worth watching?
I think you and I need to work on our skating.
I got a lot of work to do. A lot of work.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, like, you know, this has happened in the past. The NFL in 87 had a player strike, and they actually fielded replacement players. I actually know a guy I'm friends with who played, like, a game for, I think, the Packers. Actually, he played for the Patriots. He played for the Patriots, but, like, you know, guys were getting, you know, it was college guys who, you know, maybe would have gone to the CFL or you know, just played in Europe who basically stepped in. But, you know, and then baseball did it in 95, I think, for a little bit.
What did you talk about what his experience was like with the Patriots in that time?
Yeah, you know, I haven't talked to him at length about it, but, I mean, you know, I think he saw that as his only shot of ever, you know, like he'd gone to training camps before and just, you know, and I think made practice squads, but never made, you know, an actual team. So I think, you know, it was basically like, you know, you can say that he played in the NFL, but no, like I was in college at the time and I remember, you know, watching the games and it wasn't the same, you know, and I can imagine, you know, hockey just being the same way. It's like, who are they going to trot out there? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. I think it was Mark Wahlberg was in the movie about that, about the being a replacement player or something. And, Keanu Reeves was in one. I don't know.
No, it was called The Replacements.
Oh, with Keanu Reeves.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. That was kind of like, I think I don't know if like, I guess it was the whole team was, yeah, I don't know. I guess it was a strike team, but, yeah. I just think it's not, if you're a player, like if you have any aspirations of actually playing in the NHL, you're not going to do that because you're going to be branded as a scab.
Yeah.
You get out there, you're going to be such a target, you know, if you actually do make it, but, or you get blackballed. So I don't know. I guess like, you know, probably these guys who have done it in the past just figured, you know, this is my only shot, so might as well do it, you know, if I can get some money. Beats working in the, you know, working in a coal mine or whatever. So,
well, we just saw what the debacle was like with the replacement.
The refs. Yeah.
And
I mean,
put them on skates. Can you imagine? But yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know, can you imagine how it is for those guys? Cause they were, I mean, that's the biggest moment of their lives pretty much. And it's just mired in hell.
And it, I mean, you know, they couldn't even get college refs who would be like the next logical guys because those guys were all working. So, you know, they had to get high school guys and, you know, guys who I read that they had some guy who got fired from the lingerie football league for being, you know, a terrible ref. And he ended up in the NFL. I mean, it's just like, how does that even happen?
The guy who was called that Packers game where that ended where with the awkward one ref waving off a touchdown and the other one signal touchdown. He was, I believe it was him, was the next Friday, reffing a high school game.
Yeah, I'm sure. So I'm probably getting heckled by the parents.
Oh, yeah.
You suck.
Are you sure that was a touchdown? Are you sure?
It's a touch goalception.
You know, I swear to God that the only time that you could make a comedy or a feel-good movie about a labor, about labor issues in America is to make it about a sports lockout or a sports strike. Imagine, like, oh, here's a feel-good, you know, about a scab coal miner, you know? Oh,
yeah,
okay,
right.
that'll go over well.
Yeah. That replacement, I mean, that replacement ref thing was such a black eye for the NFL. It was, like, what, 3 weeks of it. But, you know, it certainly got that thing resolved quickly. But I couldn't believe they let it get to that point. I mean, how can you expect the games to be any good with refs who don't know what they're doing? And in it, you know, it was proven, you know, with games being decided by them, you know, I mean, that's, I guess that was the final straw, but, you know, it's not, you know, when you get to replacement players, I mean, that's just, that's just ugly. So,
and there's
I sure hope
weird,
it doesn't come to that.
Skill set for hockey. I mean, the skating alone is something where you just can't. You can't pick it up. It's something that you have to do for a very long time to get right. And, you know, you can run around the bases, maybe not as well, maybe not as you know, perfectly in stride like a leaping gazelle or something, but you can still play baseball and you can still play basketball and football with scrubs. And it won't be great, but they can do it. Hockey? I just don't see it.
Well, I mean, you know, you've been to enough college games. I mean, you see that, you know, there's a pretty high level of skill at those D1 college games.
Oh, absolutely.
And yet, how many of those guys make the NHL? I mean, you know, a percentage of them do, but, you know, how many of those guys step into the NHL and are instant stars? I mean, it's hard to do.
Absolutely.
You know,
it's not even 30%. It's probably, what, 10% maybe? And how many stay in the farm system and...
Right. I know, you know, there's a ton of guys from Hockey East there's a ton of guys who have won the Hobey Baker, which is the award for the best college player who, you know, maybe get a cup of coffee in the NHL. I mean, it's certainly no guarantee. I mean, I guess it's like the Heisman in that it's no guarantee that you're going to be a star in the pros, but I can only think of a few guys who made that jump, Paul Kariya being one of them, mm-hmm. who dominated. He played at UMaine, dominated for like one year. He had 100 points in like, I don't know, 30 games his freshman year, and then jumped to the NHL and was an instant star. But, you know, that's rare.
Mm-hmm. Chris Drury, I guess. Was he Hobey Baker winner, or was he?
I don't know if he won at Hobey, but he was, you know, he was certainly a top player. He, you know, played at BU, and, you know, he was, he was never like, 100-point scorer in NHL, but he kind of became known for just, you know, being a clutch player, mm-hmm. Although eventually became known for being an injury-prone player. But, there certainly are, you know, plenty of, you know, there's a lot more college guys in the NHL now than there used to be. But
in his senior year, he won the Hobey Baker.
Oh, he did? Okay, yep. There you go. But he's definitely an exception to the rule.
Even though he won the Hobey Baker, he was drafted 72nd overall by the Nordiques.
Yeah, you know, and usually the top draft picks are still like either Europeans or guys who played in, you know, Canadian major juniors. So, mm-hmm. Although colleges, you know, certainly are making some headway there, but
yeah, and the U.S. juniors is starting to make some headway as well. It's not not as much this year's draft. I believe that they were a little more. There were a few less players picked early from USHL and like, but I believe it was the last draft before that there were quite a few.
But it's, you know, you just see the level, you know, the level of play. I mean, I love college hockey. It's a fast game. It's a really good game, but you know, the level of play, just every level you go up just gets better and better. Mm-hmm. So for somebody to just jump in there, you know, from wherever,
yeah.
You know, to try and replace, you know, guys like, you know, Datsyuk and, you know, Zetterberg and Ovechkin and these guys and Crosby, you know, it ain't happening. So,
well, I'll give you a great example here. Like in Denver here, we have a brand new, team, a minor league team for the Central Hockey League, the Denver Cutthroats. And that's not a play on violence. It's what the state fish is, which I would have never known that the
really?
State fish of Colorado was the cutthroat.
Cutthroat.
Yeah. It's
Does it cut? Like, why did it get that name? It's a weird name.
I don't know. I think that there's, looking at the logo, maybe I'll just really quickly Google a cutthroat.
Cutthroat fish.
It's a cutthroat trout?
Really? Yeah.
And is it... You know, you would think they would just come right up on Wikipedia like that. There's a cutthroat finch. Who knew? It looks like there's red around its gills. And so maybe that's why, because it looks like its throat was cut. But regardless, we have now this minor league team, right? And seats on the glass. This blew my mind. Seats on the glass are $44.
Really?
In the Cutthroats Club, which is center ice, $32. To me, for minor leagues, especially two levels down from the NHL, that's pretty high. If you go over $30 for VIP glass seats, and basically the entire glass is, you know, the glass seats are the VIP seats. If you charge that much around the glass, then you better have won the cup last year and be selling out.
Oh shit! I mean, it's well, you know, and you see, like, you know, obviously we see it at an exponentially higher level in the NHL, but you would think, you know, some of these guys would sort of, you know, offer some cheaper prices to get fans to go. But,
well, and especially because this is the very first year of the of the team. Now, I'll give you a comparison here. This is in downtown Denver. This is at the Denver Coliseum. Again, brand new team. I have heard more about the merchandise for this team than anything else. They're very, very proud of their merchandise.
How are the unis?
Good? And I have not seen a jersey yet. I don't believe they have their jerseys yet.
But are they starting this year?
Yeah. Wow. I know. It's insanity,
that's crazy,
isn't it? But I think they're going to kind of unveil, or unveil to the community once they get, once they start. But about 40 miles north of here are the Colorado Eagles. They have a sellout streak, a minor league sellout streak record. They have moved from the Central Hockey League, which lost like five or six teams this year and gained one in Denver. And they've moved to the ECHL, so they're playing at a little bit higher level. Glass seats for them, $26. Side seats for them, $23. Compared to $44 and $32.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem like a ton, but you spread that out over 20 games or something, that... And for something maybe you'd want to do as a casual thing, you know, hey, let's go see a hockey game or whatnot. And
right. And
you're in a lockout. It's time to promote the team. This is your first year. They actually have our farm team for the Colorado Avalanche. They're two down from the NHL, and they're charging this much. I'm stunned.
It's dumb. You know, that comes from, you know, the owners of the Avalanche, you know, basically saying, well, we got to make some money. We might as well make it through these guys, I guess.
Well, you know, it's you're putting your farm team nearby, which you don't have an opportunity to do in as many places, unless you're in the East. You know, the Bruins have the Providence Bruins close by, so that's, you know, that's good. But, like, when you think about the LA Kings, their AHL affiliate is in Manchester, New Hampshire. And their ECHL affiliate is right next door to them in Ontario, California. So if you want to go through the whole trip, you have to go from ECHL in California to New Hampshire, the AHL, to the NHL in LA.
Part of that may be just there's more teams on the East Coast to choose from.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's what kind of kills a few of these leagues when they try to spread themselves out so far. The Central Hockey League did that. The United Hockey League did that. The United Hockey League had 14 teams. When they finally merged with the Central Hockey League, they had 6, and it was because they spread themselves way too far. When you minor leagues, you have to, you know, travel costs are huge. In the NHL, they're a big expense, but you have the money to back it up, so you have chartered planes, and, you know, sometimes the team actually owns the plane itself, things like that.
So, getting back to the NHL lockout, you know, do you think it's going to, you know, cost the entire season? Do you think they'll come to an agreement and save at least some of it?
I have, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I have no idea. I would love to be able to predict something. The way that the NHL is set up right now with its board of governors, with Gary Bettman, the commissioner, he has really consolidated power. And it takes I think it's a 2/3 majority to overrule him. So if he doesn't want to sign a deal, or if he's got the big money makers in the league barking in his ear, he's going to pay attention to them. I look at it, I just think because it seems like there's two different ownership groups, the haves and the have-nots, and they would want different things. So it's hard for me to really say, well, what do I think is going to happen? We're going to hear a lot of rhetoric. We already have. So I'm not sure. I would not be surprised if the season was cost. I was wondering this the other day, and maybe you'll know this. Has there ever been a league, a sport, that has lost two seasons in a row?
In a row? You mean like back-to-back labor stoppages? Yes. or literally like 2 years in a row?
Like back-to-back labor stoppages. Like,
I don't think so. I think the NHL was the first one to wipe out the whole year. Like, other leagues had lost part of a year. I mean, you know, but I don't think anybody's ever, like, taken out the entire year. That was, I'm pretty sure the NHL was the first one to do that in 04, 05. And, yeah, for it to happen again is just, especially so soon, is unreal. But, I mean, it does look like they're, you know, they're not kidding around. I mean, they, you know, they're basically, you know, the league's basically looking for the players to give back I don't even know what the proposal is anymore.
24% off the top of their salaries, which is exactly like last time. And imagine if you're, I mean, part of the problem with the fans is that they have a hard time understanding the players because they look at the money and they go, my God, you're making a ton of money. What's the problem?
Right.
Well, if 7 years ago you were told, you're the problem, and we need to take 24% of your money away from you. And then 7 years later, you're told, you're the problem.
You're the problem.
We need to take 24% of your salary away from you. You'd kind of say, hey, screw you. You signed the contract. It's not, you know, why is it suddenly my problem again? I understand adjusting numbers, you know, adjusting percentages, but that does seem pretty crazy to have to give up 24% again.
And, you know, the players have said, you know, we'll play under the current agreement, you know, while we work this out. You know, they're willing to do it. And the owners are, you know, basically saying no way. So, I mean, you know, I'm sure part of it is,
I mean, there's
PR, but...
You are listening to Completely Conspicuous with Jay Kumar.
The music you heard was Yola Tango with Stupid Things, Hello Darlin' with Capricornia, and the Mountain Goats with Cry for Judas. And now it's time for the Bonehead of the Week. This week's honor goes to a Florida man who was arrested after he allegedly washed his girlfriend's mouth out with soap after she ignored his demands to stop cursing, according to thesmokinggun.com. John Vincent Caruso, 26, was arrested September 25th following a confrontation with Stephanie Madewell, 20, in the home they share with their two children. Madewell told Pasco County Police Sheriff's Office deputies that she had been arguing with Caruso earlier that night when he warned that if she raised her voice again, he would put soap in her mouth. While Madewell was seated on a couch, Caruso came up behind her and put a bottle of liquid dish soap in her mouth and squeezed the bottle, according to a sheriff's report. Madewell, who said that the Dawn soap went into her mouth and throat, told deputies that as she sought to knock the bottle out of Caruso's hand, he pulled it out of her mouth, slicing her lip in the process. Deputy reported that Madewell had a cut on her upper lip and that there was dried-up dish soap on her right cheek slash chin and down her neck into her bra and shirt. When questioned by a deputy, Caruso admitted he squirted soap into Stephanie's mouth, according to a criminal complaint, charging him with domestic battery. Caruso was booked into the Pasco County Jail, where he remained in custody last week. Before he was arrested, Caruso told an investigator that his parents used to put soap in his mouth. He added strangely that he will still put soap in his own mouth out of respect for his parents. Well, good for him. And now here's a couple more songs to close things out.
We'll be right back.
Big Chief with Locked Out off the album Platinum Jive, and Public Image Limited with Disappointed off the album 9. And that wraps up episode 247 of Completely Conspicuous. Thanks again for listening, and I hope to join me next time when James Grayley and I continue talking hockey. The ceremony song is from a split 7-inch with Titus Andronicus on Matador Records. You can download it for free at matadorrecords.com. The Mountain Goat song is on the album Transcendental Youth on Merge Records. Download that song for free at soundcloud.com. The Allo Darlin song is on the album Europe on Slumberland Records. Download that song for free at iotapromonet.com. And the Yola Tango song is from the EP Stupid Things on Matador Records. You can download the song for free from epitonic.com. Jay Breitling produced the opening and closing themes of the show. Voiceover work is courtesy of James Grelian. Completely Conspicuous is a Tan God production.